Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm Tim Miller. Today's episode is going to feature my live conversation with Will Salatan and Bill Kristol on Wednesday night in Philadelphia. It is spicy. Will brings me some ponies. I reject one of them. But one of the topics we discuss is how President Biden should talk about the campus protests in response to the conflict in Gaza. And in the intervening time, he took a little bit of our advice. And so I think it's important to hear what President Biden said about this. I'm going to play the full commentary. It's about 2.5 minutes. If you already heard it, just hit that fast forward 30 seconds button. Let's listen to President Biden talking about the protests.
Before I head to North Carolina, I wanted to speak a few moments about what's going on our college campuses here. We've all seen the images, and they put to the test two fundamental American principles. Excuse me. The first is the right to free speech and for people to peacefully assemble and make their voices heard. The second is the rule of law. Both must be upheld. We are not an authoritarian nation where we silence people or squash dissent. The American people are heard. In fact, peaceful protest is in the best tradition of how Americans respond to consequential issues. But, neither are we a lawless country. We are a civil society, and order must prevail. Throughout our history, we've often faced moments like this because we are a big, diverse, free-thinking, and freedom-loving nation. In moments like this, there are always those who rush in to score political points. But this isn't a moment for politics. It's a moment for clarity. So let me be clear. Peaceful protest in America. Violent protest is not protected. Peaceful protest is. It's against the law when violence occurs. Destroying property is not a peaceful protest. It's against the law. Vandalism, trespassing, breaking windows, shutting down campuses, forcing the cancellation of classes and graduations. None of this is a peaceful protest. Threatening people, intimidating people, instilling fear in people is not a peaceful protest. It's against the law. Dissent is essential to democracy. But dissent must never lead to disorder or to denying the rights of others so students can finish the semester and their college education. Look, it's basically a matter of fairness. It's a matter of what's right. There's the right to protest, but not the right to cause chaos. People have the right to get an education, the right to get a degree, the right to walk across the campus safely without fear of being attacked. But let's be clear about this as well. There should be no place on any campus, no place in America, for anti-Semitism or threats of violence against Jewish students. There is no place for hate speech or violence of any kind, whether it's anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, or discrimination against Arab Americans or Palestinian Americans. It's simply wrong. There's no place for racism in America. It's all wrong. It's un-American. I understand people have strong feelings and deep convictions. In America, we respect the right and protect the right for them to express that. But it doesn't mean anything goes. It needs to be done without violence, without destruction, without hate, and within the law. You know, make no mistake, as president, I will always defend free speech. And I will always be just as strong in standing up for the rule of law. That's my responsibility to you, the American people. My obligation to the Constitution. Thank you very much.
Mr. President, have the protests forced you to reconsider any of the policies with regard to the region?
No. Thank you.
Mr. President, do you think the National Guard should intervene?
No.
Pretty good. Pretty good, as usual. But here's the problem with Biden on this. While everything that he said, going back to first principles, talking about the importance of free speech and safety, while all of that is sensible, I don't know that it's going to satisfy the people who are most upset about the conflict. Want some proof? Let's listen to another piece of audio. Here is at the University of Alabama, two groups of protesters, students protesting the war in Gaza, and then the right-wing MAGA counter-protesters. They found agreement on something. Let's take a listen. Yeah, that's right. Both sides of the protest are shouting, fuck Joe Biden, in unison. It's like, and they're also standing in a horseshoe, which, you know, it makes it a little bit on the nose. But here's the problem. This gets to the problem. As I said, the people who are most upset about this conflict, left-wing protesters who want dramatic policy change. We've heard from them. I've seen them on social media complaining about Biden's comments already. And Jewish conservatives, moderates, who feel like they're being targeted and are being targeted in certain cases, and, you know, who want a more dramatic response, which leaves Biden appealing to mostly, well, me. And I like being appealed to. That's great. But here's the thing about my perspective on this and President Biden's. It's at a remove, right? Like, I don't have a team jersey. And when you're talking about an issue that people are deeply passionate about, where they see their perspective as the only righteous one, it's very hard to appeal to them from a remove, right? I can tell about this from my own inbox experience. You know, our listeners who feel like Israel's campaign to eradicate Hamas, protect their right to exist, feel like I get a little too squishy sometimes. I hear that. Our listeners who think the campus protests are a righteous campaign against genocide, tell me I'm obsessed with the handful of examples of anti-Semitism on campus. I hear that. I don't know. I sometimes think that folks are underappreciating the degree of Jew hate that is out there right now at these protests. I've heard that firsthand. But here's the thing. My job and Joe Biden's are different. I love taking negative feedback. I want to tackle hard issues on this podcast. I don't know about you guys, but spending 10 years being right about a blindingly obvious question about whether we should submit to a depraved monster with no redeemable qualities who wants to tear America apart. Like, it makes me want to shake strangers on the street sometimes and be like, is this real life? Have I gone through a black hole? Like, what is happening? How is this possible that so many people are going along with this fucking idiot? Like, it is not a complicated question. It's not a complicated moral choice. They're not different perspectives at play. Like, it is abundantly clear what is right and what is wrong when it comes to Donald Trump. The question of how we should react to the situation in Gaza and on campus is not like that. It's much more complicated. So I want to be able to continue to try to hash that out here. We're going to continue to do that. If we can't hash out hard disagreements in this community, what the hell hope is there for the rest of us? But here's the thing. Joe Biden's not a podcast host, all right? Like, he's got a different job. He's got to lead the country. He's got to enact the right policies, the morally right policies that help, you know, alleviate the most suffering. And he's got to beat Donald Trump, all right? So balancing the right and just policies with the political imperative of victory in November is a dicey animal. Like, it's tough. Holding his coalition together is like trying to keep up a Jenga tower. You pull out a little piece, you lose a piece from the, you know, lefties in Ann Arbor, and you got to put another one back in of, you know, center right folks in Macomb County, right? He's got to keep a very disparate group together. And so from my perspective, he's managed the policy side of this about as well as anyone could have hoped. Some of the stuff's out of his hands. Like, I just totally reject the smooth brain, like, well, it's Biden's fault that there was another flare up in a centuries old war in the Middle East. He just had to respond to events. And I think he's responded to events quite well. But that leaves the politics. And we've got 6 months to ensure that the people in these disparate groups that should be part of the Biden coalition stick with him instead of throw our democracy away for Donald Trump. And so We got to make sure that folks understand the stakes, understand the choice. I spoke to a woman in Philly at the end of this event you're about to listen to. She has younger siblings in PA, says they're on the fence about voting. They're apathetic about Biden. Like, go get them. Finding those people in your lives and explaining the nuance of this situation and the threat is up to us. In the meantime, around here, we keep talking, you know, try to not go crazy and see if we can, I don't know, maybe we can iron out peace in the Middle East on this podcast. We'll see. It's Friday. So Spotify playlist is in the show notes. I've been in my bag lately on this playlist. So go enjoy the tunes. We've got another live event. The Philly event was so great. It was so wonderful to see everybody. Michael Luttig was there. We got a huge standing ovation. You know, everybody's coming up to me. It's like, I'm a Bernie Sanders leftist that loves you guys. Like, I was a Republican. I'm still a Republican. We had a Republican elected official there. So a huge just ideological diversity there. And it was awesome to hear from everybody. And we've got some more events coming up in D.C. May 15th. Tickets already on sale. TheBulwark.com/events. And then we're going to be in Colorado on June 21st. Okay. We don't know exactly where yet. It's not going to be the Western Slope, but, you know, it's going to be somewhere Denver Boulderish. And we'll be there June 21st. So put a hold on your calendar if you're in Colorado. If you want to come make a weekend out of it, my hometown is beautiful in June. All right. It's a Friday. So come hang out with us in Denver. We'll have tickets on sale soon for that. Up next, live from Philadelphia, Bill Kristol and Will Salatan. Check it out on the other side, and we'll see you next week. Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. I'm here with the normal Monday guest, William Kristol. And the great Will Salatan. House Lib. Bill, we're here in Philadelphia, and so I thought that you'd talk about your glory days, back when you wore an onion on your belt, like was the style at the time. What kind of memories does it bring back?
That was so shameless, that beginning. I'm surprised we don't have one of those applause signs up there, you know, that it goes off, you have to stop right away so you don't waste valuable seconds. It was great to be back here. We lived in Philly. My first job was teaching at Penn. My wife, Susan, was finishing up her dissertation that she taught at Penn. She taught classics. She was a real scholar and actually knew something.
Oh, wow. I taught, makes a lot of sense. So that's where all those references are coming from in morning shots?
Yeah. And I taught political science, so I didn't really know much. But yeah, it was great. We lived two, 3 blocks from here, 13th and Spruce. It was kind of a rough neighborhood back then, if we can be honest. You know? I think we'd been here about 2 months. This is true. When I was coming back, So I took the subway from Penn down to Broad Street, right, and walked down to 13th, I guess, to our apartment building, our one-bedroom apartment there. And I'm walking along, and it was maybe November or something like that, and suddenly this guy runs past me full speed. Couldn't really tell why he was running so fast, and then 30 feet, you know, 5 seconds later, another guy, really burly guy, runs past me full speed, clearly chasing the first guy and pulling his gun as he runs. And I thought, yeeks, you know. Everyone else, Philly, of course, routine. There's like no one even looked around. He shot above the guy's head to stop it. He was a plainclothes cop. That was Frank Rizzo's Philadelphia. It was a slay. So that was my, it was a great time in Philly. I was here for the glory days. What did we have? We had the Phillies win the World Series in 1980, Tug McGraw, big parade, right? I remember that. Eagles, I believe, lost the Super Bowl that year, but they got to the Super Bowl. That was good. Dr. J, the Flyers, Penn, this is amazing. Penn went to the NCAA Final Four. You remember that in 79? They beat, I think, Duke and North Carolina or something in the regionals. Fantastic upsets. Went to the Final Four. Played Michigan State. Tim's a huge basketball fan. You both are, right? Played Michigan State. Irvin Johnson. And I believe Penn set a record by losing one of the Final Four games by 48 points or something like that. Anyway, we had a great time in Philly. It's great to be back.
We're going to go deeper into your memory here in a little bit, back an additional decade earlier than that in a second, because I want to start with a very uplifting topic that I'm sure everyone here agrees about 100%, which is the conflict in Gaza and the protests that are happening around the country. We're just going to get that out of the way first, all right? We're going to do a little bit of chatter, and I'm hoping that Will is going to offer me a pony, because I wanted to share something that I got here last night early, because I talked to your governor today, actually. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And so I didn't want to miss it. So I came in a night early, had a couple of beers, and I popped off a thought about the protests on X.com, Twitter.com. which is exactly what you're supposed to do after a couple of beers. And my thought was essentially summed up as something like this, which was on Reddit. We have a great Bullock Reddit community. You guys should join in if you're not. There's a thing called Am I the Asshole? Okay, and so a person tells a story, and they're like, am I the asshole here? And you know, you can reply either, yeah, you're the asshole, or no, you're not the asshole, or the third option, ESH, everyone sucks here. And that's kind of how I feel about our current debate. Like the protesters with the, you know, we need you to bring us food, and we're gonna whine about this while our parents are playing for Colombia. We've got Hezbollah flags. They kind of suck a little bit. They might be nice and earnest, but they kind of suck. Hamas obviously sucks. Bibi obviously sucks. Bill might disagree with this, but the cops with their riot gear, you know, like they're storming Fallujah, going into the campus quad. I feel like they kind of suck. Seems like everybody sucks here. And so I wanted to start, Will, by you offering me a pony. Is there anybody that does not suck in this debate? Can I find any light?
Okay, so first of all, I have to say, I also have Philadelphia roots here. I went to college at Swarthmore, so those will...
Is that Philadelphia, really?
It's not.
We should not let him get away with that, you know? He came to Philadelphia. He passed through Philadelphia on his way to the
airport. It counts. You know, like, I'm taking that. It's the Philly Burbs, okay? Nobody was chasing me. I did not witness crimes. I did, apropos of this topic, I did witness, the student protests. I'm very familiar with that. And in fact, we used to have, you know, Swarthmore, for those of you who don't know, is perhaps still known as the Kremlin on the crumb. But now that the Kremlin is part of the Republican Party, maybe it doesn't work so much. So we would have, I guess you'd call them now outside agitators, like the folks who come into some of the Colombia and the other places. We'd have the Trotskyites, we'd have the Stalinists, or Leninists, or whatever. We'd have them show up on the dining hall, Sharple's dining hall. And so they would distribute their, whatever their socialist communist newspaper was. So we did my friends and I did a comedy radio show, and we went out in front of the dining hall, and we distributed a mock socialist newspaper. And the headline on our mock socialist newspaper was a picture of us, and it said, "Students distribute socialist newspaper in front of Sharples." So we were early on the sort of performative protest thing. This is a real protest, what's going on right now. And I think Tim would agree with me on some of this. I do sympathize with the cause the protesters are talking about. We have more than 30,000 people dead in Gaza. That is real. Somebody has to speak up for that. I do not begrudge anyone speaking up for that and feeling that that is not spoken up enough for. The way in which you do that is another question. And I think that the ways in which a lot of the students are doing it is not helpful to the cause, and it is, in fact, alienating. But I do think Tim asked me for a pony, and I have to deliver a pony. So I did bring a pony with me. This Jim Swift, one of our folks, gave me this pony. Thank you, Jim.
Is that like the Swarthmore mascot? The Swarthmore pony.
Ouch.
Bill, I'm gonna have to familiarize you with the Swarthmore basketball team, which has been kicking butt. So I struggle to find a pony here because I'm sympathetic to the idea that everybody is hateful in this situation. But there is one thing that I think good that can come out of this, which is we've had these debates on campus for a long time where the left is speaking for a minority group and saying that they feel threatened, they feel uncomfortable, they feel endangered. We need to protect them. We need safety for this group. And the right has said, oh, come off it. You know, you're playing the race card. Get over it, free speech. And what we have here is an inversion, because the group that's being targeted, that's felt targeted on the campus, is Jews. And that's not traditionally one of the groups that the left has spoken for as a threatened group. And suddenly you see the right looking at an endangered group and saying, they mustn't feel uncomfortable. It's not right to make these students feel uncomfortable. They feel unsafe. And the left now is saying, you know, sort of, not exactly get over it, but, you know, it's the protesters here have a right to speak up. and that speech needs to be heard. So I think it's an occasion for us all to be in the shoes of the other, of what the other side usually says, and to recognize what's worth taking from that perspective.
Sorry, put the pony back in the shit pile. Sorry, Will, it was a good try. It was a good try. But the people on the right pretending to care about the Jewish kids on campus are full of it. They don't actually care about them. They don't actually care about them, do they? I mean, do they really? I don't know. I think that if Jewish kids were on campus getting menaced by, like, little Proud Boys, do you think that any of these guys would be speaking up? Do you think Lee Stefanik would be waving her finger at the presidents on campus? I would say no. I don't know. Bill, do you have a pony for me?
That was an impressive pony-esque performance by Will, though.
I appreciate the effort.
I'm not really into finding the ponies. I'm sort of on the other side of saying there are no ponies. And the one thing I would disagree with you on is the cops. In this respect, I went back and looked at the 68 Columbia protest, which I remember living in New York, a couple of miles south of Columbia. I mean, I wasn't involved. I was in high school. But, you know, it was a big deal, obviously. It was, as I say, near, not that far away on the Upper West Side. And I went back and looked at the headlines. I think 100 students, the cops were not as militarized then. They went in with billy clubs, and that's what they had. 100 students, they had to lug the students out of there, and 100 students were injured. I don't know, 35 were hospitalized. It was pretty bad. That was a bigger protest. They occupied more than one building. But actually, I thought the cops in Columbia, so far as I could tell, did a good job. They removed all these protesters. I don't think anyone's hurt, even. I mean, is there even a case, one person who got, you know, had to have stitches or something? They carried them out. They put them in buses. They booked them, presumably. And they're out, and they're gone. So I'm willing to be critical of the police, God knows. I think I've learned over the last several years there's more police misconduct than I as a former conservative had realized. And you know, no, seriously, it's one of the things that people ask me, what have you changed your mind on? I was much more sort of instinctively, I would say, pro-police, law and order kind of. But I still think in this case, there hasn't been much police misconduct. I think they actually turned out to be pretty well trained for this kind of stuff, it looks to me. And other places, too. I mean, in Florida and other places where they've gone in, you don't really have the stories. You did have those stories at Harvard, which I went to a year after the Cambridge cops came in 69. Famously, this was their one moment to really, you know, beat up some Harvard kids who they hated and and not without some justice, if we can be honest. You know, those Harvard kids lording it around over the townies, and they just took it out on these kids. And I don't have the sense that's happening this time.
Did you just call yourself a former conservative?
You found your pony by accident.
Yeah, I go back and forth. I'm a Josh. I'm a Shapiro Democrat. Is that okay? Can I mean that?
Hey. I hope Josh doesn't hear that.
Yeah, I know that was bad. Strike that from the record. Don't take that out of the podcast there on Friday. Right?
I want to go back to 68 for a second, though. I do want to reiterate. There's an everybody sucks element to it. And I do feel like there's a very serious crisis happening in Gaza. I'm very empathetic towards it. I think I'm totally pro-protest, drawing attention to it. I think that, by the way, you could argue that some of the protests have already had an impact in that the way that they're, you know, letting additional trucks in with humanitarian aid. Who knows if that would have happened if there wasn't quite as much blowback. So I'm for it. But we can use a little more strategy. You know, we could be a little bit smarter about it. And I'm a little bit concerned that we're staring down the barrel of Richard Nixon, part two. Bill, you wrote about this earlier this week. Are these kids going to fuck us? I guess that's my question, Bill. Are these kids going to fuck us? We're doing a lot of work here to try to prevent Donald Trump 2.0, but are they going to ruin it?
It was a pretty big, I think the campus protests have been a pretty big, unintentionally, and maybe it's not their fault, but still in reality, in practice, a pretty big in-kind contribution to the Trump campaign. And maybe I don't read it right, because the people I know are particularly interested in this, a lot of, you know, East Coast Jews who are very pro-Israel, but also very anti-Trump, and the degree to which the anti-Trump stuff
We are in a swing state. East Coast Jews, conservatives who are particularly anti-Trump. Yeah. I don't know if there are anybody out there.
The degree to which these people have become the face of the American left, and of course it's ridiculous. They don't like Biden. They're protesting against Biden's policies, right? Nonetheless, I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've had casual conversations with or read, you know, emails from that were passed on to me about, you know, this is the party you signed up with, Bill. This is the liberal, this is the left. And I do think good liberals should do more to distance themselves from the protests and from some of what they've done. And some have, and some have been.
Including our senator.
Yes.
Here in Pennsylvania.
He's been fantastic, you know. Fetterman, yeah. Yeah, Fetterman. I can't decide. Are we for?
You like John Fetterman?
Are we for Fetterman in 2028 or Shapiro in 2028?
Why not both?
You have the Electoral College problem, for the ticket there.
Well, I can make a move.
This is kind of fascinating to me. So I've never been a Republican.
The pandering to the crowd that goes on in these things is just terrible, you know?
Thank you. This is Philly, after all.
So I've always been sort of a moderate Democrat, so I'm like being hated by the left or having differences with the left, but it's totally fascinating to me to come to the Bulwark. I mean, I was at Slate, and I was among my people, liberals, progressives, and now I'm with sort of these former Republicans, and I'm so used to people on the right wanting to elevate voices on the hard left because they know that that's going to, like Fox News,
right.
We're going to show you the craziest people on the left because that's going to drive our audience to the right. And it's really interesting to me to be at a place where you guys who are, you know, have done political strategy, especially you, Tim, like, you know that the hard left is alienating the middle. Yep. And so you guys come over, and instead of trying to elevate the left, you're talking to the moderates on the left about the far left and saying, get those people out of the way because you're now playing for our team. Now you're playing for the left
That's
half
right.
of the spectrum. Is
That's
that
right. Well, you know.
Well, but Mike, look, I mean, Mike, we'll
so
go
to speak. No, please,
no. I mean, Mike Johnson wasn't an idiot when he went to Columbia and made it, you know, it's really terrible to do that because it just makes the situation worse and it's vulgar pandering to his own base and so forth. But, you know, enough Republicans go visit New York and go to Columbia and speak out against the protests and introduce stupid resolutions to the House and so forth. And some voters think, I guess they're the ones who are against this, who are for Israel and against, more important than being for Israel, actually, in this case, I think, who are for the majority of the college students who just want to go to school, take the tests, not be harassed all the time, not have loudspeakers at midnight if they're trying to sleep or do other things in dorms. And I do think it hurts the effort to, among swing voters for the Democrats to say, no, we're we're a sane party. We're not the caricature that Fox has created of the Democrats and of the left. So I worry about the political implications of it in this year. And I do think the Trump people think it's a gift. And Trump started talking about it. I noticed the last couple of days
it's
went on Hannity.
It's a freebie for Trump.
Totally.
It's a freebie for Trump. Trump's coalition is people that hate these protesters. Then they're all united in that right now. Some of them are anti-Semites. And some of them are pro-Israel, but they're
some
all united.
Some are both.
Yeah, that's, some yeah, of them right. are both. But they're all united in hating these protesters, right? Whereas the Biden coalition is very, fractured over
Diverse.
All this.
Yeah.
You know, it's very fractured over all this. The Pod Bros brought me on today because they're like, we need somebody else. We need one of you people to come over here and like point and represent the argument that like. Like, there are legitimate concerns here about anti-Semitism on campus. And, like, you can be concerned about anti-Semitism and concerned about this protest and also concerned about the humanitarian issue. But, like, that's tough. And I think that Biden has struggled a little bit. It's just not his strength. You know, I said to those guys today, I was like, now lightning's really going to strike me. But we could really use Obama right now. Because, like, he would have been good at this. He would have been good at this. He would have been good at this, doing the well on the one hand, on the other hand. And he was like, that was his strength, you know? It's not really Biden's. Like, he hasn't been out there at all. It feels like he's been really limited to written statements. I don't know. What do you think Joe Biden should be doing?
I mean, just one thing on that, though. I mean, it is striking how, the deputy press secretary.
Great statements, by the way. All the deputy
Biden
press secretary
should be on camera.
Awesome.
I mean, Obama could have spoken up, actually. He did graduate from Columbia, and he could say, I'm sympathetic, I process it myself, blah, 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 but, don't take over buildings, don't break the glass, don't dump
don't
things on
flag,
police,
don't tell Jews.
And I think that would
Europe.
Have been helpful. I guess he's too busy doing other things. But, you know, you mentioned 68, so just one reason I was in 68, in the summer of 68, in between, I guess, finishing high school, I guess my sophomore year, and working somewhere for the summer job, I volunteered in the Hubert Humphrey campaign for 3 weeks. All my peers were for Gene McCarthy or Bobby Kennedy, obviously, and, well, half my peers were for them, half my peers were to the left and for the socialists who were at Swarthmore and stuff like that, and I was for... And this was at our little private high school in New York, and I was for Humphrey, because I was like the centrist, anti-communist Democrat. And Humphrey, and so there was the first campaign, I was just a ridiculously, you know, just low-level volunteer, I don't know, looking, putting stamps in envelopes and stuff, whatever you did in those days. But I followed the campaign after that very closely, you know, as you do when you get interested in politics in high school. And I was really heartbroken when he lost to Nixon. And he lost by, so I looked up some stuff the other night when I was writing a newsletter. The Democratic Convention in Chicago, as this year's is, was a total disaster with riots and demonstrations, obviously, which this year's could be. Humphrey came out of that 20 points behind. That won't be the case now because we're so polarized, but still, it could do some damage. Had a fantastic comeback the last few weeks and lost by 0.7% of the popular vote to Nixon. If you look at the polls right now, Trump is ahead of Biden by 0.7%. It's like a little uncanny. I mean, the parallels are pretty crazy. The date on which the cops went into I can make it worse, and then I want Will to talk. But the date on which the cops went into Harriman Hall at Columbia is the same date, 56 years ago, as April 30th, as yesterday. I mean, it is sort of weird. And Humphrey had the same problem as Biden, which is he gets attacked, of course, for being part of the Johnson administration, which is fighting the Vietnam War, so the left hated him, and not all of them ended up coming home to him, on the one hand. Then he distanced himself from Johnson correctly in October and said, I'd be more interested in the peace negotiations in Vietnam. And then some of the old, you know, the Johnson loyalists and others were, you know, you're betraying Johnson and so forth. And so, like Biden, in a way, Humphrey really a wonderful man, and Biden a very decent man, too. So similarity of being caught in this trap. And it's the trap of incumbency. And this is what worries me. One of the things that worries about the race, obviously, is that if you're incumbent, you get blamed for a lot of things, a lot of them unfairly. And being a challenger is better, and being a challenger who's also a former president, so you get the benefits that people think incorrectly. Well, he knows what he's doing. He can do the job, you know? And he's the challenger. He's going to shake everything up. Anyway, that's why I'm worried about the race and why I got depressed thinking about the Humphrey analogy.
Okay,
that's
wow.
Enough. So, Will, give us
Thank
some more
you.
Ponies here.
Well, final point is, what if Joe Biden calls you? Like, what is he supposed to do about this? What is he supposed to do?
I don't know if Joe Biden can do it. I mean, the problem is, let me come back to Obama, actually. So, Humphrey, obviously, before my time, but Obama was really good at this stuff. Sorry.
This is what I put up with all the time, you know? It's like, that's okay.
But Obama was really, you know, when I came to the Bulwark, I was like, what were two of the most difficult things I was going to have to deal with? One was that I loved Barack Obama, and the other was that I think abortion should be legal. We'll get to that. But Obama,
next. Stop pandering.
But like this whole caricature on the right of like Obama was like some kind of hard lefty. Obama was great at this. Obama was great at expressing exactly what you're talking about, Tim. It's on the one hand this, on the it's all, you know, he would encompass it. And Obama would classically say, that's not just my opinion, that's the opinion of these three ultra-conservative people.
Mark Zandi.
All right. So, but that's kind of what we need. And I think one of the problems we have is in Joe Biden, we have a very nice man, a very decent man, but not a very compelling, charismatic speaker. And he's not out there delivering a message that brings people together, even if he's trying. We're going to have to get through this election with this guy. And it's going to be a challenge because he's not Obama.
Is that the end of the answer? I'm sorry. That's okay.
Where is that pony?
Okay. Well, so do we think he has to talk about this more? Like, do you want to see Biden out there talk about this, or is this right? He's just going to let this go, let the deputy press secretary talk about it, and hopefully Anthony Blinken cuts a deal?
This is not about America. This is about keeping Israel from invading Rafah, ending this conflict as soon as possible. And, you know, hopefully with you know, maximum destruction to Hamas and minimum destruction to innocent Palestinians, and putting this behind us, because I think as long as it's festering, it's just going to hurt. It's bad for the world, but it's also bad for Joe Biden.
Fair enough. Okay, we're doing what we can, but all of you jerks out there that are cheering for Will, because he was never a Republican, it's your job to go talk to your children and tell them to maybe protest Donald Trump instead of Joe Biden and focus on that.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Let's talk about abortion. You want to talk about abortion? Some good news, bad news this week for abortion rights advocates, or today, rather. In Florida, the six-week abortion ban goes into effect today. Or was it yesterday? Whatever, this week. Time is a flat circle. And today, in Arizona, two Republicans. There were two good Republicans in the Arizona State Senate. How about that? Hot damn. And they crossed over and created a 16-14 vote to overrule the 1864 law written by the bigamist pedophile. So now the good people of Arizona do have abortion rights up to 15 weeks. The Florida thing is interesting. We're going to spend a lot of time in the Time magazine interview in segment two. But Trump refused to say what he would, how he'd vote on that. That doesn't feel sustainable for him, seeing as he is a Florida man. But Will, what do you think? Like the extent of the opportunity here for Democrats and the extent of the badness, I guess, for women in these states.
Well, the Florida thing is enormous because if you now, Florida was the state in the southeastern quadrant of the United States where it was still legal up to, it was 15 weeks after the last ban. Now it goes to six. I cannot stress to you enough, for those of you who don't know this, how big a difference that is. You may not like a ban at 15 weeks, but at 15 weeks, 90% of abortions, more than 90%, something like 93, are before that period. At 6 weeks, something like two-thirds, at least 60% of abortions are after that. This is an absolute abortion ban, and the entire southeastern quadrant of this country is now back to pre-Roe v. Wade abortion illegal days. I have been waiting for a political explosion in this country, and I know people say it was the 2022 elections. I didn't see what I thought I was going to see. Maybe we're going to see it now, because when abortion becomes illegal in that much of the country, I'm just waiting for women to rise up, and like men who understand that this is not a decision best made by the government. And politically, I think the Republican Party got away with going to 15 weeks in some states, and then Ron DeSantis just decided, hell, I'll sign a ban at six. I think that that's going to trigger it. And again, it didn't go into effect, so it wasn't real. It's real now. So I am waiting for, in 2024, the monstrous backlash that I didn't see in 2022.
Where do you want it to come from that it hasn't come from yet? Are we talking about maybe Trump women? Like women, non-college, working class women that are like, I've had enough of this. Like, this is crazy. Like, it is crazy. And if you're in Florida, you know, Carrie Lake did the stupid thing where she was like, well, it's not that big a deal in Arizona. You can just drive to California or New Mexico. Great talking point, Carrie. But like, you can't really do that if you live in Daytona Beach. You know, you're a long way from Norfolk or whatever the closest place is you can get an abortion if you're a working class woman in Daytona Beach. You know, is that like kind of the demo? Because we spend a lot of time talking about, you know, the college educated Republican, the Nikki Haley voter class. We spend a lot of time talking about them. But is there a non-college group that the Democrats can cut in with on this issue, do you think?
To me, one of the interesting things about this issue is that it crosses party lines. I did a whole book about this. This was what the Webster versus Reproductive. I'm going to teach people back to 1980 and 1990. But the point is that there was a group at what was then NARAL, National Abortion Reproductive Rights Action League, that did all the political strategy. They did the polling, and they saw that they could draw a broader coalition, not just liberals, but people, conservatives who don't like the government on their back. They don't like tax. And they went for those people. So what I'm interested to see is whether we get some of these libertarians on the right as part of that coalition. Florida is now an increasingly Republican state. A bunch of people moved to Florida because they liked Ron DeSantis's COVID libertarianism. Yeah. How are the COVID libertarians going to vote when the medical authoritarianism is not vaccines, it's not masks, it's abortion? It's the right telling you can't get an abortion. So I think there's a lot of potential to draw some of those libertarians into a pro-choice coalition.
I mean, it's on the ballot. I think just to be clear what Tim was talking about, it's on the ballot this November in Florida.
Well, the legislation that went through the legislature went into effect this week. But now it's on the ballot.
A proposed, I think, a constitutional amendment to overturn that legislation is on the ballot. So it will be a big story. Everyone in Florida will vote on that at the same time they vote for president. And I do think it could have a big effect. I don't know. You know, I just had lunch at Penn with John DiIulio, an old friend of mine who teaches political science there, a really wonderful guy and a very good political scientist, a serious one, unlike what I was. And he wrote a paper, very interesting, on the white working class, which everyone talks about so much. But there's wildly different votes. About half the white working class, oversimplifying here, is call themselves evangelicals, and about half aren't religious, don't go to church, basically, just secular. The voting difference between them is as great as the difference between the white working class, non-college, and college-educated. The white evangelicals, the white working class evangelicals are, I mean, 85-15 or something like that for Trump, really lopsided. Maybe some of them will also think this is cruel and move away, but that's probably, you know, they're mostly pro-life.
That's not got our chickens.
Yeah, there. But the white working class, non-college, was sort of like, I don't know, 65-35, much more like that. And that's where you presumably could get some movement, right? I mean, you're a, you know, you didn't finish college and you're working, anyway, whatever the type of person it is. So I think that, I do think this could have a political effect. It's one of the biggest issues the Democrats have going through, don't you think? I mean, for me, the three issues are democracy, which unfortunately the country doesn't seem to care that much about, so that's kind of bad. Ukraine, basically, and Putin and NATO and the whole state of the world order, which the country, I think, cares more about that than people realize. But here, I do think the administration has done a bad job of making clear how unbelievably dangerous and disastrous it would be to have Trump. But those two maybe are too, I don't know what, macro
esoteric.
Or high-toned or something for politics. But the third is Dobbs, right? I think those, for me, are the big three. And it may turn out, for me, Dobbs is important, but the other two are more fundamental. But it may turn out politics is funny, right? It doesn't work that way. And maybe Dobbs ends up being the biggest issue. And I do think having it on the ballot in Florida, the state Trump lives in, where he'll have to vote, allegedly, if he bothers to vote, I don't know, for or against this constitutional amendment, that could have spillover effects way outside of Florida, right?
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I want to go to D.C. Can we do a little swamp talk? My big Marjorie Taylor Greene had a big press conference today. Some compelling points. She made an announcement. We were mentioning Will's. Now, Will is so moved by the concerns about anti-Semitism on the right. We should mention that Marjorie Taylor Greene said today she could not vote for the resolution condemning anti-Semitism because she was worried that it could lump in people who wanted to point out that the Jews killed Jesus. So she did not want to run afoul of that law.
It was a long time ago.
So Marjorie was a no on the anti-Semitism resolution. She's ready to get rid of Mike Johnson. She's going after the Uniparty. Mike Johnson is part of the Uniparty. Our tent just keeps expanding, baby. It's like, you know, it's radical Christian conservatives all the way over to like DSA liberals, right?
Did you have some evidence just this week, last week? Maybe I shouldn't even say this, that someone on Mike Johnson's staff is reading the Bulwark carefully or something like that?
You can say this. It's fine. Whatever. I don't think he listens to the Bulwark podcast. Maybe he does.
Apparently he does. That's
right. I wrote an article where I complimented Mike Johnson. I did it. I complimented Mike Johnson, okay? He did what Mike Evans couldn't do, which was, he said, I was like, I'm going to do this even though Mr. Trump doesn't want it on Ukraine, and good on him for doing that. And so I pointed that out, and I savaged Mike Evans mercilessly about how pathetic and sad his life is now and how he's just gotten absolutely owned by Mike Johnson. I received a text from an old friend who I haven't heard from in like literally 8 years, who's Mike Johnson's now comms director. It's like, nice article. Period. So I don't know. Maybe we're back in. I replied. I was like, thanks. That's it. That's the extent of the exchange. Anyway, what do we think? MTG's trying to get rid of him. Uniparty. She's worried. Her and Tom Massey were out there. Do you think that she was talking with Gates today? Do you think that they're going to be able to scalp him? What do you think?
No, they're not going to. I've been waiting for this whole thing. This is a real pony, okay?
All right.
This is a real pony.
Hot damn.
The Uniparty. This press conference was Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massey. And that's it. If they could have got anybody else, where was Gates?
He was at best.
Slow drive.
Injections in the forehead. Forehead keeps getting higher. Higher the forehead, the closer to God.
You have to remember, for
Matt
Gates...
Matt does listen to this podcast, by the way. Hi, Matt.
For Gates, God is in the mirror, so he's got to move forward to see. So they would... It's Marjorie Taylor Greene, Thomas Massey. If they could have had anybody else, they would have the Freedom Caucus... Not there. Nobody else there. These two. That's it. We're going to take down. So there's two members. Now, it's a narrow majority for the House, so they think they have power. And they're not going to get it, because Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats said, we're not going to let Mike Johnson fall over doing the right thing in Ukraine. The Uniparty, what these two members are attacking, is the blessing. This is what we should want. It's not, the Uniparty is Republicans and Democrats who actually want to govern. Who actually want to get something done, to do their job. Passing the bills for Ukraine, for Israel, honestly, trying to pass the Lankford border provisions, that was a problem that conservatives identified. And what we have in Washington now is not so much a fight between the right and the left. We have that. We have a fight between the people who want to govern and the people who just want to pontificate and object and fight and go do Fox News hits.
Throw poop.
Yeah, right.
They don't want to pontificate. They want to throw a ship.
So every opportunity we have for Democrats and Republicans to work together on issues where they can agree on a solution, and the border is a classic case of that. Ukraine is another classic case. I'm for it, and I'm for Marjorie Taylor Greene and these people identifying the Uniparty and distinguishing what it is.
All right, Bill, that was nice, but let's ignore Will. I know he's right here. It's nice. We're supposed to be earnest and care about governing, but is there a dark part of you that's kind of like, let him throw fucking Mike Johnson overboard? That little weirdo. Wants to get into our bedroom and wanted to overthrow the election to make Donald Trump an autocrat. Like, should we really be working with them? Like, doesn't it suck that the Democrats have to swallow hard and help Mike Johnson?
It's, you know, that is politics to some degree. No, I'd say for the next 6 months, the task is to get some number of Republican-ish voters out there and say, hey, half the Republicans in Congress, just a little over half, actually, including Mike Johnson, who's very conservative, probably more conservative than you are, Mr. Swing Republican voter or Mrs. Swing Republican voter, they voted for aid to Ukraine. They knew how important this was. And they were not happy when Trump blew up the border bill. We can stipulate that. And that you, therefore, have a permission structure, as Sarah likes to say. You're not voting for Biden, right? You're voting against Trump, and you're voting for a guy whose position on Ukraine is identical to that of Mike Johnson. And to be fair to Johnson, he's gone pretty far. Like, he did somehow, if I can use this phrase, get religion on this or something. I mean, he's now a Reagan Republican, and he's a wartime speaker. Biden hasn't even said, maybe he shouldn't say, that he's a wartime president, and Johnson has sort of internalized that notion, I think. So I think the Democrats should use Johnson, honestly, as a way to get to voters. They're not going to get to the diehard, I speak, but it creates a broader permission structure for the Biden set for voting against Trump, or at least not voting for Trump. Maybe they can't quite bring themselves to vote for Biden. The border thing, I do wonder, don't you think Biden should, I mean, he signed off on that deal. Trump torpedoed it. Biden said, we're going to hold their feet to the fire. Trump's going to pay a price, the Republicans, for torpedoing this bipartisan deal. But this is the one problem with Biden as a politician. It's not just the eloquence. He doesn't really hammer home. He's got a winning issue there. Some of us probably aren't crazy about the border deal. It's a little, you know, restrictive and all this, but whatever. They signed off on it. The Democrats in the Senate, 47 of them voted for it. You know, they did the right thing. They were a governing party. They swallowed hard and accepted something they didn't like to get the aid package that was so important for the country and for the world. Having done that, they should get some more credit for it, and Biden should be just hammering the Republicans. Where is that border deal?
Amen. I think we're going to get that. I think we'll get that. I think it's a big part of the campaign. I thought the first Biden ad on this topic was basically good, which is like, I got infrastructure. I tried to do this. Like, this is the guy that doesn't care about you. I think that crazy, selfish versus trying to get things done is a contrast that they are going to push in the campaign year. Okay, we're going to do more campaign stuff with Sarah and JVL, but I've got one important topic that, you know, people might wanted Sarah and JVL's opinion on this, but really when I was listening to the crowd, they're like, I want to hear what Bill Kristol thinks about marijuana being rescheduled. So, are we excited, Bill Kristol? I love it. On the other podcast, I love it said to me, he's like, you know, the 90s Republicans like Bob Novak, they were right. It was a slippery slope to legalization of marijuana. Suck it, Bob Novak. How are you feeling about the schedule, you know, reassessment of marijuana?
Well, Will is the bulwark expert on marijuana.
So that's true.
I think really Will should be the one to speak to this.
We can't answer it jointly?
Oh. Ooh, that was good. That was not prearranged either. That was good.
It's good news. We're not talking about it. We'll get to the actual final question. That's good news. That was ridiculous. We have people like, we've got white college bros, like, you know, fucking smoking, hitting the bong while we've got black people in jail for marijuana. It was an absurd situation. And I'm glad that Joe Biden, a little belatedly, is finally resolving it. And Merrick Garland doing something right for once. That's nice. But given just kind of this big day, it's not 420, but, you know, we're coming off of 420 and we had this big announcement. I wanted to know, Bill Kristol, what is your dream blunt rotation?
They always do this.
For people who don't know, a blunt rotation is, you know, four or five people stand around in a circle, puff, puff, pass. So you're looking for interesting people. You want nice people. You want good conversation. You're going to be there for a few minutes. And so I'm just wondering, all of world history, you know, we're allowing you to exhume people from the grave. I'd like to know who you would like to have in your dream blunt rotation, Bill Kristol.
I would like Tim, Sarah, and JVL.
I was hoping for like Gramsci. And, you know, I don't know, I was hoping for you to pull deep cuts from your time at, you know, as a Straussian. There are no Straussians you'd like to join us in the blunt rotation?
I get so much abuse for the mistake of having, you know, actually gone to grad school and taught for a couple of years. It's okay. I take it.
Will, you know,
Will takes abuse for going to Swarthmore.
Do you have a dream blunt rotation?
Confession. I am the only pot virgin I know still remaining in this world. So if I'm going to do this, I'm losing my pot virginity. It better be with some important people. Right. So I'm going to do one person for one category, somebody who's just fun to get high with. Yeah. I'm picking Charles Barkley. I just think that would be...
Sixers. Also Sixers.
Guaranteed.
More pandering from Will.
Yep. I want one person who you want to, like, ask them, what the hell were you thinking? You know? And so I'm going to... I thought you were going to give us some, you know, Roman or Greek philosopher. I'm going to go with Hegel, because I went to Swarthmore, damn it. I read a lot of Hegel. I didn't understand any of it. And I literally wrote a song about Hegel, and it had a line, makes you wonder what he was smoking. So if I'm smoking, I want to smoke with Hegel and say, what the hell were you talking about? And then I want a Marshall McLuhan type figure. You know the Woody Allen movie where he like brings in Marshall McLuhan? You have somebody from the past who can say, you know, that isn't what I thought at all. So, I mean, you know, obviously you want to pick Jesus. Like, you'd want to go up to Mike Johnson and say, you want to have Jesus with you so you could say, no, that isn't what I, you know.
So you got Barkley, Hegel, and Jesus?
Yeah, or you could pick de Tocqueville. You could pick Ronald Reagan. You bring back Ronald Reagan and just
say, I don't want Ronnie watching me hit the blunt.
No, that isn't what I meant at all. You know, wouldn't that be useful? Who would you do?
Thank you. Will took the project seriously, which I appreciated, though. My dream blunt rotation is Mitt Romney, Larry David, Angel Reese, and Lil Wayne. It's a nice little group. They've got a lot to say to each other. Guys, what do you think? Will Salatin and Bill Kristol.
Place where boys and girls can all be queens every single day. I'm having wicked dreams of leaving Tennessee. You Santa Monica, I swear it's calling me. Won't make my mama proud, it's gonna cause a scene. She sees her baby girl, I know she's gonna scream. Girl,
Borg Podcast is produced by Katie Cooper with audio engineering and editing by Jason Brett.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.